Please stand by. Good day, everyone, and welcome to the WebSphere to Support Technical Exchange conference call. Today's call is being recorded. Now, for opening remarks and introductions, I'd like to turn the call over to Mr. Elijah Robertson. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Jessica, and welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is creating and managing fault analyzer history files. Today's presenter is Bruce McDonald. Bruce has worked in Level 2 support for almost 20 years and has supported the Fault Analyzer product since its initial version 1 availability in 2000. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Bruce.
Thanks, Elijah. Okay, we're going to be covering, as the title states, creating and managing fault analyzer history files. Let's move on to slide 2. Okay, let's quickly go through the agenda of stuff we're going to be covering. First, we're going to introduce what the history file is. We're going to be going over how to create history files, how to access the history file and get the information that's stored there, actions commonly taken against history files, use of Fault Analyzer's IDI utility to control the size of your history files, setting up multiple history files, using views to view multiple history files, and then we'll summarize and go on to questions and answers. Okay, let's move to slide 3. Okay, Fault Analyzer history files are basically just PDSE data sets, and they contain information about ABINs that have been analyzed by Fault Analyzer. Information on how to create these data sets is covered in Chapter 13 of the Fault Analyzer User's Guide and Reference, Chapter 13, Setting Up Fault History Files. The kind of information that's contained in these fault entries in the history file includes real-time analysis, key information, including the ABIN codes, failing program name. It's going to include details about the execution environment, such as the job name, the system ID, date and time that the ABIN occurred. And there's going to be a real-time analysis report, if that's applicable. It's not always part of the fault entry in a history file. And there's going to be a saved mini-dump, and again, if applicable. Normally, a mini-dump will be saved in the history file, but there are certain circumstances, such as if it's too large for your max mini-dump pages setting, then it will not be saved. The fault entry is going to include the name of the associated system dump or SVC dump if the dump was taken. And when Fault Analyzer analyzes an ABIN, depending on certain option settings of Fault Analyzer, there are circumstances where if it deems its analysis of an ABIN is successful, it will defer the writing of the system dump. But again, that can be set up depending on the options you use with Fault Analyzer. It will also include subsystem information, such as CICS, DB2, and IMS information. Okay, let's go on to slide 4. Okay, Fault Analyzer history files also contain a couple of very special members. If you were to browse the Fault Analyzer history file, up at the top you would see a $$ index member. And this member is basically an index of all the fault entries, all the analysis of different ABINs done contained in the Fault Analyzer history file. It's used for quickly accessing the information in the history file. It also has some basic information about each fault contained in that history file. If that file is missing, the next time an ABIN is taken and the Fault Analyzer history file is written to, then that member will be rebuilt. There's also a $$ backup file, which is the next file in the history file. And it's just a backup of information about that history file, such as the maximum size that can be in different settings you've set up, in case there's damage to the index file or if that somehow gets deleted, the particular settings of that history file will be picked up from the backup member. Let's go on to the next slide. Okay, accessing the history file. To get into a history file, you use Fault Analyzer's ISPF interface, and this is basically what that looks like. It shows at the top, in this particular case, the history file being viewed is mcdonnell.idi.hist, and it shows all of the fault entries contained in that history file. As you can see, there are 7 columns describing particular information about this history file. And on the left, there's a column for your actions to be taken. This view of the history file is very customizable. If you were to use the view at the top, you can see the menu options. If you were to use the view pull-down menu and select option 8, column configuration, there are actually a possible 35 different columns that you can display in this ISPF interface. The default is to show these 7, but there are a lot of different possibilities. You can determine which columns to display. You can display all 35 columns, and you would scroll over to the right to see the remaining ones. Then you can determine what order to have these columns in. Okay, on to the next slide. Okay, as you could see in the picture on the previous slide, the display shows all of the fault entries contained in the history file. They're listed with the most recent one at the top and on down. And on that, it also showed the actions you could take against those. And the different actions you can take against those fault entries in the history file are: question mark is going to show you just an overview of the history file, some basic information that it contains. Putting a V or an S is going to allow you to view the real-time report in that history file. And that report saved at the time that the abend occurs, or if it was not saved, there is a Fault Analyzer option, a deferred report. And if you choose not to save real-time reports, then when you enter a V or an S to view the real-time report, it's going to be dynamically created at that instant. An I will give you an interactive reanalysis of the fault, and this is only possible if a mini-dump was saved, and under most circumstances you will have a mini-dump in the history file. Or it can also be done if there's a system dump available, and the fault entry, if there's no mini-dump, the fault entry should have a reference to the location of the system dump that was written at the time of the abend, and Fault Analyzer, if there's no mini dump, should be able to go out and do an analysis of that system dump so that you can still do an interactive reanalysis. A B will initiate batch reanalysis, and it will actually bring up a batch job that you can submit to do an analysis of a fault. That's not done too often, especially now that with very recent maintenance, doing a view of a real-time report with recent maintenance resulted in a dynamically created real-time report. So there's not much of a use to do a batch reanalysis from the ISPF interface anymore, although there are times where you might want to do that. And lastly, using the character D will delete the fault entry. You can't really do just a straight edit of the PDS, or you should not do a straight edit of the PDS and do a delete of a fault entry, because that puts it out of sync with your $dollar index file. So if you want to manually delete just a particular fault entry in your history file, you're going to want to go in there and use the D character when you're in the history file under ISPF. Okay, next slide. Okay, so the most commonly taken actions of those different actions we just went over would normally be to view the real-time report or to do an interactive reanalysis of the fault entry. So we're going to go over a few pages now just to look at what kind of things you can see in the viewing of a real-time report or an interactive reanalysis. Okay, on to page 8. Okay, had you put a V next to a fault entry, here's what it would look like bringing up a real-time report. It's going to show you a lot of detail about the admin that occurred. This is a static report, as it says there, so you will need to scroll down it to get through and find different sections of the report on what occurred at the time of the admin. It's going to show you the admin code. It's going to show you where it occurred. Let's go on to slide 9. It's going to show if there was a listing or a fault analyzer side file available at the time of the admin, it's going to show you actual source information. And in this example, it shows COBOL source that's taken from a COBOL compiler listing, and it shows the actual source statement. And then at the bottom, as you can see, it actually shows the values, and it lists what the cause of that error is. Okay, on to slide 10. It's going to show an event summary in this real-time report, which is sort of similar to if you're used to tracebacks in LE dumps. This is like very similar to a traceback that you would see in an LECE dump. And it's going to show you the calling sequence of the programs that were running. And in this case, you can see there were a couple of LE routines involved. And you can see the module name where the actual zero divide occurred, which is AABBCC2. Okay, let's go on to slide 11. Okay, it's going to contain basic information about the failing program. It's going to show you compiler options, language environment options, the name of the load module, the name of the system it was running on. Okay, let's go on to slide 12. And it's going to just show you some general information about the job itself, when it was run, when it was compiled, various things. One of the disadvantages of a real-time report is that applications can be very complex. So a real-time report, you know, in this case, the example I gave is very simple. It's a single COBOL program, and a zero divide occurs, and the real-time report is pretty short and to the point. And so in a case like this, it would be real adequate just to jump into the real-time report and get a quick snapshot of what occurred there. But if you get into a real-time report of a very complex application, it can be hundreds if not thousands of pages long. And being a static report that you just page through, it can be very laborious trying to find the appropriate information to help you in diagnosing the problem. Let's move on to slide 13. Okay, this just lists a few other things that are going to be contained in the real-time report. It's going to show you open files, relevant storage areas, an analysis of LE's heap storage, as I mentioned, LE runtime options, the fault analyzer options in effect at the time. And as I was just discussing, as this report can be very, very long, it can make diagnosing an admin a bit difficult and a bit time-consuming because it's going to list all of the events, all of the basically traceback information, and you could have 20, 30 different events, and it's difficult to sort through all of that. Okay, let's move on to slide 14. Okay, now we're going to go over interactive reanalysis and the interactive reanalysis report. And this is what I feel is the true power and benefit of Fault Analyzer. With an interactive reanalysis and the report that comes up that we're going to be going through, you can hone into, without having to go through thousands, hundreds, or thousands of pages, you can hone into particular areas of the report interactively. You go to any page that's displayed for an interactive reanalysis report, any field that is in yellow, any characters in yellow, if you put your cursor on that field and you hit enter, it will take you to that field, whether it be an address, a register, a program name, anything like that. In any storage areas that are contained in the mini dump or a SysM dump, if it was analyzed from a SysM dump, can be displayed. In the real-time report, there was a real finite of amount of information it contained, and it only contained information real specifically related to the admin. A mini dump can contain huge amounts of storage that were written to a SysM dump or that would have been written to a SysM dump. So you can really go anywhere that you need to figure out what's going on with the admin. Any storage blocks, any kick storage blocks, any LA storage blocks. And again, you just go to highlight, you know, put your cursor on an address and it'll take you right there. But as with the real-time report, it also provides you with source information, provided a compiler listing or a side file was available at the time of the advent, or you can make available when you do the interactive reanalysis. A window will actually pop up, and when it encounters a user program, it will ask you, if it doesn't already have that information, it will ask you to enter the name of and location of the listing or side file. And doing an interactive reanalysis, this is really the only way to analyze CICS system abend. If it's a kick system abend, if you do a view to look at a real-time report, it will show very little information about the abend other than what the abend was and what the transaction was. And it will actually, when you do a view of a CICS abend fault entry, it will say, and I quote, "This fault is best analyzed interactively using Fault Analyzer ISPF interface by selecting 5 Analyze MBS Dump data set from the fault entry list display." So basically, it even when you try to view a kick system dump, it even tells you you really need to do an interactive reanalysis to get the information you need to diagnose this. Okay, let's go on to slide 15. Okay, here's a look at the initial page when you've done an interactive reanalysis, and it lists the different information you can access. And as I said, anything that you see here in yellow is an interactive field, and you can place a cursor there and go right to it. So, for example, at the top you see it says fault summary, the module name, the program name, the source line name. If you put your cursor on that source line name, it will actually take you to the COBOL source and show you the failing instruction. If you put your cursor on that System 0 Charlie Fox, that zero divide exception, it will bring up a screen because Fault Analyzer and its ISPF interface is linked to message manuals. It will bring up a screen defining what that particular abend is, give you an explanation, straight out of the manual, an explanation and an action you can take straight out of a system codes manual. Or if it's an LE message, it will bring it straight out of the LE manual. If it's a KIX message or an KIX abend, an ASRA, it will bring up a definition of what an ASRA is. And then down below, it's a lot of the same information that was contained in a real-time report, except instead of having to scroll through this lengthy report, you just select which of those you want to see, whether it be a synopsis of the abend, the event summary, which was also contained in the real-time report, a list of open files, storage areas, any messages that were issued at the time. Again, the language environment heap analysis of the heap storage, etc. So let's go on to slide 16. Okay, so here in this particular example, I had chosen the synopsis. And here's what it shows. It shows what the abend was, shows the actual COBOL source, tells you which source line it was, and then if you were to scroll down, it would tell you what the data items were and whatnot if you were to scroll down beyond this. Let's go on to slide 16, or 17, excuse me. Okay, so in this case, the failing source instruction I chose, and it actually takes you into the assembler code for that COBOL instruction. So it gets you down to the actual assembler code for the actual failing assembler instruction. So it gets you pretty granular on this sort of thing. Okay, let's go on to slide 18. Okay, on the reanalysis report, the next screen would be from that initial interactive reanalysis screen. If you had chosen event summary, this is what you would see. And again, similar to what you saw in the real-time report. But again, in this case, if you look on the far left, it shows the events numbered, and those numbers are in yellow. And so you can pick any particular event and zero in on that one. So in this case, if I were to pick event one, let's move on to slide 19. Okay, so I selected event one, and it went on to the COBOL statement and a lot of information about the failing program. Again, this is just showing certain information, and if you were to scroll down, it would show you PSW registers. Let's go on to slide 20. Okay, good. Yeah, here I actually did scroll down, and here are the registers at the time of the advent. And again, all of those register values, those are in yellow, so you can actually select a particular register and go to that address in storage. So let's go on to slide 21. Okay, so here I selected register 8 because register 8 had said that it was working storage. So I selected register 8, and here it actually takes you to the working storage section as contained in storage at the time of the advent. And all of these all of these values are in yellow, so at any place in here, if you see an address that you want to go to, you could, again, put your cursor there, and you go straight to that address. Okay, let's go on to slide 22. Okay, just a real quick look at what you can do with the CICS system abend. This is the interactive reanalysis screen for a kicked abend. And it, as you can see, it looks a little bit different. It does not contain all of the different synopses and whatnot, because in a kick system dump, it can contain a lot of different abends for a lot of different transactions. So this gives you, it will give you a synopsis of what KICS region's running, but the synopsis is not going to show the actual abend. To look at that information, you're going to have to go to the KICS system information. Let's go on to slide 23. Okay, and here, selecting KICS system information, as you can see, it shows a wide variety of CICS information. Shows a task summary, shows the error history, storage usage by task, MTrace records, information on the different CICS domains. Now, this is something to look at kick stumps. Us here in Level 2 use Fault Analyzer all the time. It's the easiest way to get a lot of valuable information out of a kick system dump. Let's go on to slide 24. And this is just scrolling down, showing the rest of the information that's available, which is additional domain information. And the very last entry there is the kick trace. You can get a lot of trace information out of the dump. It formats it very nicely. You can get, if you want further information on looking at KICS abend, you can go to the Fault Analyzer User's Guide and Reference. Chapter 6 is entitled Performing CICS System Abend Dump Analysis. So that can give you a lot more information on what you can get out of Fault Analyzer, fault entries for a KICS system abend. Okay, let's go on to slide 25. Okay, here I had chosen item 2, the error history, and this brings up kernel error table summary, which shows all the different abends that are contained in this dump. So let's go on to slide 26. okay, here I chose error number able, which was the first SOC 4 in the list, and it brings up the registers PSW and different information at the time of that particular ABINT. And again, all the fields here in yellow, including the PSW address and the values in the register, those are selectable, and you can zoom in right on those, go straight to the storage for that particular PSW. Okay, let's go on to slide 27. And on this slide, this shows what would happen if the very last entry, there were all the different domain names, the very last one was the TRC, CICS trace. And if you were to choose that one, brings up a panel and asks what kind of a trace you want, and you have a choice of choosing an abbreviated, a short, or a full CICS trace. And in this case, as you can see, if you know King's traces, this is a full CICS trace. And this is just one screenshot that shows the entire trace. You can scroll through the entire trace contained in this dump. So a nice way to format this KICS information. Okay, let's go on to slide 28. Okay, let's change gears. We're going to talk about the IDI util, which is a utility that's used to control the size of your history file. It can be used to delete entries. You can set certain criteria for deleting entries in your history file. The IDI util will normally be run as a batch job. So you can run the IDI util against a particular history file and say delete, for example, delete any false entries created prior to July 1st, and it's going to delete all of the older false entries. What we normally recommend, and I believe what most people will do, is use the IDI util to set a setting called set max false entries. And what that will do is it will set a maximum number of false entries for a history file. So, for example, if you set that, your max false entries to 500, as soon as 500 had been written, when the 501st one is written, the first entry is deleted. And so it will always maintain a size of 500 false entries. Yet you can go in and run a batch job to delete older false entries, but people find it a little bit easier to have this as a self-maintaining history file so that it maintains a certain number of entries, and they don't have to go in and take any actions against it. There are other things that can be done with the IDI utility, such as if you notice the list of false entries, they all had a certain naming convention, for example, such as F00027, for example, for the 27th entry in a history file. You can set the prefix instead of F00. You can say, I want it to be, say, if it's a history file for a particular KICS region, you can say, you know, KICS2 or KICS1 as a prefix for your fault entries in that history file. So you can use IDI util for different things. For more information on that, Chapter 22 in the Fault Analyzer User's Guide and Reference covers using this particular utility. Let's go on to slide 29. Okay, setting up multiple history files. And this varies, company to company. Some people prefer to have one history file and have everything go into it, whether it be their various KICS regions, their test regions, their all of their batch jobs into one history file. I think there are advantages actually to setting up multiple history files. You can set it up, each user can have a history file. You can set up history files, maybe one for KICS development regions, one for KICS test regions, one for KICS production regions, and one for batch jobs, for example. You can set it up however you want. Now, the history file to be written to is can also be set at a job level with an IDI HIS-DD name, which is how people testing Fault Analyzer, such as if I'm testing history files and Fault Analyzer, I'll just add an IDI HIS to my batch job, and that way I can control exactly what history file it's written to. Next bullet here talks about the Fault Analyzer analysis control user exit, which is there are various user exits that you can set up with Fault Analyzer, which are covered in Chapter 26 of the User's Guide and Reference. The analysis control user exit can be used to tell Fault Analyzer when an abin happens where to write, which history file to write to. For example, that exit can be set up to say, if it's a kicks abind, write it to this history file. If it's a batch abind, write it to this one. Or it can be set up, if the abind happened with these particular users, write to this history file. With those other users, write to another. There's a great deal of control that you can have on where fault entries are written to with the analysis control user exit. And you can set up very complex user exits, which I may actually cover in the future in another technical exchange, just on these user exits, because they're very powerful. Fault Analyzer provides what are called Fault Analyzer data areas that are covered in the user's guide, that these fields in the data areas can be interrogated to determine very exactly what to do with Fault Analyzer, including where to write fault entries, which history files to write fault entries to. And again, these user exits are covered in Chapter 26, Customizing Fault Analyzer by Using User Exits. Okay, let's go on to slide 30. Okay, using views. If you are writing to different history files, for example, if you are writing, say, your development kicks regions to one history file, your test kicks regions to history file 2, your production kicks regions to history file 3, you might want to view these fault entries in these three history files, but to see them all on one screen instead of having to switch over to different history files in your ISPF interface. So with that, you would set up what's called a view. And with a view, you can set up a view to contain any number of history files you wish to. And this would then allow you, at a single view with the ISPF interface, have an integration of various history files. There's an IDI views data set, which you would set up in your Fault Analyzer data sets option, where you would list which history files you want to be included in that view. And you can set up various views. So at the top of the ISPF interface, where you type in the name of the history file, which we saw very early on in this presentation, you would actually type in the name of the view instead, and it would integrate all of these various history files, whichever ones you wanted to be in that view. So it makes viewing of multiple history files a lot easier, especially if they're related, such as they're all kicks history files, or they're all batch history files, or test history files, or however you want to have them set up. Okay, let's go on to slide 31. Okay, well, that pretty much covers what I was going to talk about history files. So in summary, history files are very simple to create. You know, they're basically just a PDSE, and the user's guide provides the data set attributes of the PDSE. Fault Analyzer provides actually a sample job in its sample library for creating one if you wish to do it with a batch job. And history files are pretty easy to maintain. You can, especially if you're using setting the max mini dump pages, you can have basically a self-maintained history file that stays at a particular size and automatically deletes the older fault entries. History files are accessed through the ISPF interface, although you can obtain real-time reports by doing a batch reanalysis of a particular fault history. So it can be accessed through a batch job, but normally people will access it through the ISPF interface. History file fault histories contain a great deal of information about Avind, and particularly when viewed interactively. User exits can be used to determine what history file is to be written to, so you can control the number of history files. And then additional information can be found at this website, the main Fault Analyzer website, and it has links to the Fault Analyzer library where that user's guide that I've been talking about is located. And also on the IBM System Z Enterprise Development Tools and Compilers Information Center, and here's the link for that. And it has the Information Center there contains information on Fault Analyzer, on File Manager, on Debug Tool, and on Application Performance Analyzer. Okay, on to slide 32. Okay, and then here is some additional information on WebSphere product resources. Okay, on to slide 33. So that concludes what I was going to cover on Fault Analyzer history files.
Thank you, Bruce, for a great presentation.
And there are no questions. I'd like to turn the conference back over to you, Mr. Robertson, for any additional or closing remarks.
At this time, we'll conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation. We hope you will join us for future presentations, which will be announced on the Webster Support Technical Exchange site. Remember, a replay of today's presentation will also be available on this site in the next day or two. Thanks very much for joining us today, and thank you, Bruce, for presenting today.